According to the Association to Preserve Cape Cod, there were almost 36,000 acres of farmland in Barnstable County in 1925. By 1969, that number had dropped to just over 5,000 acres, a loss of nearly 85%. Today, the APCC estimates that there are just over 4,000 acres devoted to farming, and that includes aquaculture. Despite the decrease in acreage devoted to farming, Cape Cod boasts a number of farms. Stephanie Foster's new book, Farms of Cape Cod, profiles 28 of the big and small farms along our peninsula, and she joins us in studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
So 28 farms, that sounds like a lot of farms. That's good.
Well,
but not compared to what we used to have, right?
Right, right. Yeah. The farms, I would say, most of them are between 6 and 7 acres. A lot of them are just backyard farms, like a little pocket farm. And farmers started growing for themselves, and then they'd have a little extra, and they would start bringing it to farmers markets. Mm-hmm. And that goes back maybe 20 years. In the 10 years that I've been going to farmers markets, it has changed considerably.
Oh, hasn't it, though? Yeah.
That person who would grow a little bit extra is now growing a lot more to bring to market.
Right. So before we talk about these farms that we have today on the Cape, let's take a step back and look at the history of farming on the Cape. 36,000 acres of farmland is a lot. Were those commercial farms selling to locals, or a combination of commercial and private farms for personal consumption?
Well, originally farmers grew for themselves, and they were very self-sufficient, and they had sheep, and they would harvest the wool, and the wives would make shirts and clothing for the family, and they grew everything they needed for themselves, and it was just a self-sufficient method of living. And then with transportation changing and roads opening up, they found a new market, and that was to grow not only for their own living but for profit. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, many farmers didn't really have the knowledge of how to do that. And they didn't know the finances. They wouldn't have the money. They were on the poor side, mm-hmm. actually. So things began to change. And then transportation really changed things for the worse for them, because other people started growing more off Cape. And with trains and steam engines, prices for transportation were very inexpensive, very cheap, and local farmers here couldn't compete. Mm. And also people found food that was grown out west to be a little more exotic than what was in their local territory.
Boy, how we've changed on that, too. Now we're getting back to what's local. It's interesting how that changes. So historically, there's been diversity in what was farmed and where, largely, you mentioned, because soil composition varied from place to place on the Cape, right?
Right. And that had to do with the glaciers. In some areas, it's very sandy. In other areas, the soil is very compacted and full of clay. So people learned in their area what to grow. Mm-hmm. And cranberries were probably one of the bigger crops. Strawberries were grown in Falmouth, and they were known worldwide for their strawberries. And in Eastham, where we are aware mm-hmm. today of the mm-hmm. Eastham turnip.
Of course.
They grew root vegetables because that was the kind of thing that would grow in that soil. Mm. And people clamored for these goods until the competition from outside arrived.
One of the oldest and biggest farms on the Cape is Cape Cod Organic Farm in Barnstable Village. It has over 30 cultivated acres. And imagine when they started, they didn't need to include the term organic, right?
Well, Tim Friary has been an organic farmer
Since day one,
yeah. Before he even took over that farm. And the farm itself is much larger than the 30 acres, but that is all that he can till at the moment. Although now he's gotten into animal husbandry and is growing pigs in addition to the vegetables and so forth. So he's using some of that acreage for livestock.
Right.
And it's interesting that on the Cape, because of the size, we really don't have any milk cows. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a one.
Right.
We have a few cows on the Cape, and that would be the Scottish Highland cow that you even find in some of the islands here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're quite... I saw some pictures from Scotland, and I recognize the cow. So,
yeah, and Tim is one of those farmers that I think a lot of people turn to for advice and help. He's been doing it right for so long.
Well, he started out that way, and he grew the way his parents grew. And he also ran into Jean Iverson, who was the founder of the Cape Cod Organic Club. Mm-hmm. So she was a pioneer, and she's also in the book. She mm-hmm. has her own chapter, and she's been around for a long time. She is 91 years young and still farming.
Right.
She farms a small area, but she does a great job.
Yeah. That's what keeps her young, maybe, getting out there and farming. So there are some farms on the Cape that have been around for generations, Crow Farm in Sandwich, Crane Farm in Truro. So tell us a little bit about these two farms and what has kept these farms alive while others have, you know, gone under.
Well, it's interesting that the Crow Farm, which has been run by the Crowell family for a number of years, it goes back five generations, actually. And then it kind of skipped a generation where the man of the family was a doctor and he was not interested in farming, mm-hmm. but his son was interested. And since then, it has passed on through three generations, mm. and it is such a joy that we could keep that farm.
It's a good thing they hung on to it, right?
Well, I mean, they have a view of the ocean from mm. one of the high hills on that property. But what saved them, they went through the Depression, you know, where they had good farming and then bad farming. And what saved their life, actually, was that Route 6A was built, mm-hmm. and it went right by their farm stand. So mm-hmm. that right. created a situation where they could sustain the farm life.
And lovely farm stand that it is. Visited it many times myself. We're talking with Stephanie Foster. Her book is Farms of Cape Cod. And then the Crane Farm in Truro.
The Crane Farm, oh. it's Crane Farm, is been a family farm. It was recently divided. I shouldn't say recently, but the latest generation divided the farm. It's Tom Kane is the farmer, and his sister got part of the land, but it was land where she has a business, and Tom kept his part as a farm, mm. and he developed it. He's actually an electrician by trade, and his son lives on the family compound. They all live in that area and enjoy the benefits of Tom's farming. And he sometimes trades his corn and his flowers and, you know, whatever vegetables he has. He has honey as well with some of his customers. So oh. he's not in it so much for profit.
Right.
Although he does grow succulents mm-hmm. for market.
Oh, wow. That's another thing that becomes so popular, haven't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, well, Crow Farm also does yeah. a lot of bedding plants mm-hmm. in addition to the vegetables.
Right. So it's no longer a farm, but Sheriff's Farm in West Barnstable has a good story about the economics of farming. It ended up costing them more to produce eggs than to buy them?
Yeah, it's true. In the dedication to my book, I have a quote, and it says, "You can make a small fortune in farming, provided you start with a large one."
Mm, yeah, right. That's one of the tough things, I think, that's been so hard for the small farmer. And, you know, and when you look like nationally, the competition from the big farms, it's really a tough life.
Well, it is. It's all labor on the Cape.
Yeah.
And one of the younger farmers, Lucas Dinwiddle, was not born a farmer. He came to it. He went to California and worked on a farm there while he was in college. He wanted to go into journalism, and he was so enamored with the growing of things that he changed his major and came back to the Cape eventually and started his own little farm. And one of the things, there were two things that were a surprise for him. And one is that there's no machinery involved on the Cape. You don't have any big tractors.
Right.
You know, it's all, you walk up and down and you do it all by hand.
The old-fashioned way.
The
right?
old-fashioned, yeah. And he was not used to that because of working on a larger farm. And the second thing was the soil that had to be amended and amended and amended.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I started gardening originally, I figured if I put some fertilizer down, compost, you know, fixed up the soil that year, it will last forever.
Yeah, no, we all, any gardener knows that, right?
Yeah.
Especially on the Cape.
No, you have to keep at it.
Yeah.
So
what happened? So what are they doing at the Sheriff's Farm now?
Well, they have chickens, they have goats, they have pigs, and a big tract of land that they farm, and it is open just about all year round.
So they are still farming it then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
they weren't farming it anymore.
No,
oh, okay.
No. What happened is that that farm provided food for the jail, for the jailhouse.
And they're not doing that anymore.
And the prisoners used to be there. In fact, I did a story with, you know, farming, gardening for prisoners when they were still doing that. But it turned out that they could buy what they were trying to provide the prisoners with cheaper than they could do it by having them work. And when the jailhouse moved, they had to transfer the prisoners. They had to provide transportation and bring them in.
So it didn't make sense.
And it just didn't make any sense. So.
So as your book illustrates, the farms on the Cape are diverse, as we're mentioning. In addition to vegetables, there's a holly farm, lavender farm, cranberry farms, vineyards, shellfish farms. I imagine this has less to do with soil composition now than economics. Farmers are diversifying in an attempt to earn a living, right?
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. People who have done some research have discovered, such as the lavender farm, that the climate is very similar to France, where lavender is grown. And the woman had her own reasons. She wanted to stay home with her children and raise them and be there for them. And she was able to do that by growing lavender. At first, she would bring it to the Boston market and sell little bunches of it. And then eventually she started selling plants and got people to come to the farm. It became a destination for people. It's the only one in the area.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I had no idea there was so much lavender, you know, the different types of lavender.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a beautiful farm.
It's real. It is a nice place to visit. It's very peaceful.
Yes.
And it smells good.
Yes.
So you're a master gardener, and you also grow and sell flowers at area farmers markets. And so I imagine that's how you've met many of these farmers on the Cape. You mentioned a young farmer who changed his major, but are you finding that some of these folks are coming to farming later in life after a career of doing something else?
Well, I think the average age is over 50 for a farmer, and there is that question of whether or not that land will be used for farming in the future. And I worried about that with Crow Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And the elder Crowell loved his farm, and he even made wooden boxes, you know, for the farm goods that he would sell. And then his son Paul came into the business, and I worried because, you know, if you have $1 million property that is right close to Sandwich Village, you could,
with water views, as you said, yeah,
you could very easily have a life of pleasure and ease without a day's work if you so wanted by selling the property. And it turned out that Paul, like his dad, fell in love with agriculture. And they're also, both of them went to agricultural school. Mm-hmm. They learned it isn't just something that...
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than
yeah,
I think.
They have, and a lot of people have done that. It isn't just learning by putting a seed in the ground and then seeing it grow. But Paul's son, Jason, was, you know, kind of a youngster back 10 years ago. And the last time when I was out there taking photographs of the farm, he had a wonderful relationship with his grandfather. And they would go off in the truck and talk, and they had just like so much to say to each other. And he also is a farmer. So it is a joy to see that property is not going to become
a
resort.
Great. It's so hard to, because, you know, there's so many farms that have gone, and you can't get that back. You can't get that back. And I know there are a lot of farms that are also thinking about making their farms conservation land so that you can, you know, keep it, you know, from becoming developed and things. But yeah, it's tough. You mentioned the relationship with the grandfather. It's funny, it made me think back to my father's father was a gardener. And you know, what do you know, as a kid, I remember, it still sticks in my head, I remember asking if I could pick one of his flowers. And he said, well, if you pick that flower, you're going to bring it in the house, and who's going to enjoy it? Just you. What if you leave it in the garden? How many more people will be able to enjoy that flower? Isn't that funny? You can remember those things all these years later.
Well,
the only thing he would let us pick were the lilacs.
Well, it's interesting that I find, as a flower farmer, that I have to pick my flowers every week.
Wow.
And as I tell my customers, that I have to pick them whether they're dead or alive. Mm. And if they're alive and well, they get sold at market. And if they're dead, they go into compost. But they have to be picked or else it goes to seed. And, and these old expressions that that you've heard your whole life suddenly have meaning later.
Yeah, isn't that funny? And there are oftentimes that farmers hold down other jobs in addition to running the farm because it's the only way they can survive.
This is true.
And I bet a lot of these farmers at the farmers markets have other jobs.
Oh, yeah. I think Tim is one of the few that has absolutely dedicated his life to farming. But other people, even Coonamesset Farm, which I think is...
another great farm,
And incredible. I mean, they have so many things going on. They have, like, ethnic dinners in the summertime and... pick your own vegetables, and they have a school for children to learn little sprouts, you know, to learn about farming, and so many different activities going on. And yet they said that they have other jobs to support the farm. And, you know, you
it's
would think
tough.
With all the things that they have going on that they would be like rolling in money, but it's not true.
Not the case. Well, and this kind of goes back to what you were talking about a minute ago about the crow farm and going to the agriculture school. There's so much involved in it other than, as you say, just planting the seeds and watering them. It's, you know, how you manage those crops and what you know, that crop rotation and what you put in there when you don't have, you know, the corn, let's say. And there's all of this science behind it now as to, you know, the best farming practices, if you will, to keep your farm, you know, sustainable.
Right. Yeah. Well, farmers are very good about sharing information with each other, and they learn a secret and a way to do something, and they share it with their fellow farmers. So,
we love that about
farmers. Well, it's interesting that when farming went into decline, there was a lot of erosion on the Cape, too, because the soil was not managed properly, and grains weren't grown because they were not raising cattle, and... You know, there was not that cycle that you need to fertilize the land.
Right. And we're talking with Stephanie Foster. Her book is Farms of Cape Cod. In addition to the larger farms, you also profile small farms, even some backyard farms. So tell us about Kelly Farm, which is a small farm in Cumaquid. And you mentioned and the farmer is Jean Iverson. So this is the one you've dedicated this book to. So tell us about her farm.
Well, she has she had more land once upon a time, as a lot of people had. And her mother sold most of it off. So she has a very small, maybe like a quarter of an acre. And she lives there at 81 and grows her crops there. And it's like enough for her. She's vegetarian. So she makes it very plain that she picks the best of what she wants for herself first and then sells the leftovers at Kelly Farm.
Yeah.
And that farm has been there a long time. She and her husband... were both farmers, but he didn't farm organically, and she felt very strongly about farming organically. So he had his own farm.
Oh, isn't that funny?
A his and hers farm situation, and she grew things the way she wanted and ate them, and he did his. And I think Tim Friary actually bought her husband's farm.
Oh, so he never came around to her way of thinking?
No.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You would think he would. So the Cape has a long history, of course, of fishing, but today's farmers are using agriculture for shellfish. It's more farming, really, than it is fishing when we're talking agriculture. This modern, I guess, day approach to farming. And you include an oyster farm in your book.
Right. East Dennis Oyster has been around for a number of years, and it's a husband and wife team. And it's interesting that there are a lot of husband and wife teams, actually. And they go out, their life is controlled by the tides, and they go out at low tide and check out all their oysters and harvest what they're going to use that day and service their clients. They even will grow, if you were going to have a wedding, grow oysters for your wedding.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you can walk out there and see, you know, a big crate with your name on it, know that those are being grown for you.
And that's really sort of a growing trend, the whole trend in agriculture, because when you look at we don't have a lot of land that's available for farming. So folks who are really looking to do any kind of, you know, bigger farming project, really agriculture is where we might see the trend going, right?
Right. It sounded a little preposterous initially, but it's really taken off, and it is sustainable. There also is another interesting farm in West Barnstable, and that's it's called E&T, and they grow hydroponically, and they also grow koi. So they have, and this is another couple, husband and wife, and they spend day in, day out together working with their produce. They grow lettuces and tomatoes all year round, and also the koi. And the koi fertilize the water, and then the fish get nutrients from the plants. So it's like a cycle, and you have to be a pretty good engineer to figure out how to do that.
Yeah,
but they were on a trip to Disneyland and saw a hydroponic farm, and it just captured their imagination, and they decided that's what they wanted to do.
It inspires people, you know. That's interesting.
So they quit their jobs, and they set up this hydroponic farm, and it's just amazing that they would do that.
Yeah.
And
it,
they work so hard, and they also keep bees because you need another job as well. So they grow honey and make candles, beeswax candles, in addition to the fish that they supply to nurseries and so forth for home ponds.
Right.
And they supply natural food stores with the greens, as well as farmers
market. We really do have diversity, don't we, when you think about it? So, I mean, and I guess for you know, we talked about some farmers coming into it late in life, and also there seems to be this young people having an interest in farming as well. And though we don't have a lot of land, there's this sort of specialty things I'm thinking. And a lot of people going, well, you know what? I'm going to make cheese. And then, so they have these small sort of cheese, you know, the whole local food thing is so popular, or just lettuces or herbs. So there's really a lot of opportunity in some ways for some of these small farmers, you know, that do the farmers market. Do you see, though, it being enough to make a living off of for some of these folks down the line? Or do you think there's always going to have to be the second job?
Well, I think on Cape Cod, it's the way.
It's the way everybody is,
right? You always need an ace in the hole.
Right.
I mean, it's like because of the season and the tourists coming and going, you know, you need to think about your winter and, you know, be like a squirrel.
Right, squirrel it away, So what about, now, what kinds of flowers do you grow?
Well, I grow a tremendous number of dahlias, which...
one of my favorites.
You know, they're beautiful.
Oh, they are.
And, you know, I didn't want to do that in the beginning because it's so much work. Mm-hmm. You have to plant them, and then in the fall you dig them up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have made every mistake you can possibly make with dahlias. You know, I dug them up, and then I was tired, and I decided, well, I think I'll clean them tomorrow, and I'll cut the stems. And that night there was a frost, so I lost them. They turned to slush. I stored them in my... garden shed, and it was too cold. They froze again. So
you learn over time.
But now I plant out 20 crates, and every year you get more when you dig them up. They're like potatoes.
Yes,
you grow
exactly,
more.
Yeah.
And I have started selling the tubers because
I just
can't handle more than 20 crates. And it takes me a week to plant them.
Yeah.
And I always forget when it comes time to dig them up that it will also take me a week. I'll do it in a day.
Yeah.
But
it takes you a week. It's amazing. You know, I think, too, there's a lot of local farms on the vineyard. And I know in this book you focus on the Cape. But I'm always amazed when I drive around and just see the variety of the flowers. You go to the farmer's market over there, I just can't believe the different kinds of flowers that are grown on that island.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, every year I start to say about the dahlias, I also grow zinnias, and I grow them by color. I start them in my greenhouse. I buy them by seed and plant them and then put them out when it's warm enough. Mm-hmm. So, and every year I try to simplify and say, well, I'm not going to grow cosmos. You know, I think it doesn't last as long as the other flowers, or marigolds, because I don't get a chance to pick them. I have so many other things to pick that I end up leaving them there. So I try to refine every year, but I'm always trying something new. I just can't resist.
No, you can't. And, it's like an obsession, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I admire other people's flowers and flowers that I'm not growing. So I don't have much room for sunflowers because they take a lot of room up, but I love them too.
So in addition to writing the text for the book, you also did all the photographs, right?
Yes.
So even the pictures are all modern day. They do sort of give us this glimpse of what the Cape might have looked like in the early 20th century when there's so much of land devoted to farms. It's very, I mean, you really picked very picturesque farms for the book.
Well,
and that was intentional.
I tried to for because it is a book of photographs. Mm-hmm. It is somewhere between a guidebook and a coffee table book. And there are tips from the farmers about various things, whether it's growing or actually cooking. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, has a lot of things chock-a-block in it mm-hmm. of information. So,
yeah. And also I think, too, as we have more educated consumers, this whole, you know, growing local, buying local is really just taking off.
Well, it's been a blessing.
Yeah.
I remember back to the first year I did a market, and you know, go back to Tim Friary there, too. It was before the Sheriff's Farm. And he would get these plastic bags, kind of filched them from the supermarket, mm-hmm. so that when someone bought string beans, he'd have a little bag to put them in. And when I first went to market, I had a beach umbrella with a little table, and I would have to hold the umbrella every time the wind blew.
Oh, no.
Because it would go sailing off. So things were pretty primitive then, and now the farmers are very skilled at displaying mm-hmm. their goods and growing them and presenting them. It's because the public has responded.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, they were just, you know, sort of health food nuts who would go to the mm-hmm. market and
oh,
they'd bring their own basket
yeah.
and, you know, buy a little of this and that. And now everyone goes to the market, and mm-hmm. it's quite social.
Yeah.
People bring their dogs, and they run into their neighbors.
You know, the toughest thing about it is choosing which market to go. There's so many now. Remember, there were just a few,
right,
and there are so
right.
many now. It's like, okay, which one do we want to try, you know, this week?
Well, every town has a market, mm-hmm. and as you said before, every
yeah.
town has a little flavor of its own
right.
And personality. And so you can choose by that.
Right.
You can choose
by
what you want to buy.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, the book is Farms of Cape Cod. Stephanie Foster, thanks so much for sharing your book with us, Stephanie. It's a beautiful book.
Oh, thank you very much.